Thank you for downloading episode 4 of the YSF podcast, the podcast brought to you by Yorkshire Sport Foundation. We're talking PE, physical activity and sport in primary schools during this episode. If you're in the wider sport and physical activity sector, you may find it interesting, but it is an episode aimed at those working in or with primary schools. Introductions, I'm Andy Morgan, Media Manager at YSF and your host. We've got three guests on the episode for you today. Steve Caldicott, who is Head of Health and Safety for the Association for PE and is also an independent Ofsted inspector. He was one of the keynote speakers at our PE conferences so far this academic year, and we caught up with him at the Kirk Lees PE conference to talk about the new inspection framework, and that's coming up very soon. Also at the PE conference, we spoke to Matt Carbert, principal at Orchard Primary Academy in Dewsbury. Matt has been talking about putting a physically active learning strategy into practice at his school. Thirdly is the man sat opposite me, Dan Wilson. He's our development manager for PE and school sport. Or if you're looking for him on Twitter, it is the Dan Wilson. Good afternoon, Dan. Thanks for joining us.
Hi, Andy. No problem.
One half term down. We're doing this just after the October half term. What's been the common theme or thing you've picked up on during that first half term when you've been out and about at either PE conferences or in and around schools?
So obviously there's loads of conversations about Ofsted, which I think we're going to be picking up later, and the new framework. But interestingly, this time of year, the weather's not great, particularly up here in Yorkshire. Various innovative solutions that schools are doing to try and overcome the fact that it's harder to get kids outside doing PE and sport in this weather. Things like doing more active learning activities, making the most of moving around during maths and English lessons and all the other subjects. Another one, I had a really good conversation with a head teacher in Bradford recently who had just moved various modules of her PE curriculum around and put outdoor adventurous activities in the autumn term, particularly for looking at orienteering activities. So the kids didn't have to get changed into their T-shirts and shorts. They could go outside, put a jacket on, run around with a clipboard, trying to find checkpoints, doing orienteering activities in the rain, in this awful weather up here, doing PE lessons, which I thought was a really good idea, but also really good way of kind of being innovative and making sure that you get outdoor learning activities throughout the curricula, throughout the year.
Yes, it's a time of year where you need to be creative to get the kids active, and we've got a new resource that we'll put on our website that might give you some ideas. We'll link to that in our show notes for you. But generally, if you go to yorkshiresport.org/primary PE, a lot of information, a lot of resources on there. So on to our first guest, and Steve Caldicott, who, as I say, is Head of Health and Safety for AFPE and also an independent Ofsted inspector. This episode came on the back of an email from a teacher in Rotherham who was asking about the new Ofsted framework and how they can make it useful as an assessment and not just a tick box exercise. Now, excitement isn't a word you'd often associate with Ofsted, but that is how Steve has framed it. So we began by asking him just exactly why he is excited.
I think the term that I would use is opportunity, because it's a fantastic chance for people to reflect on what they do and why they do it. In previous frameworks, sometimes people have thought that there's been too much emphasis perhaps on data, on doing something, sticking to a task, doing something because you have to do it. This is a real opportunity to start to look at your curriculum and to think about the intent that's set out there, and then set up and implement your own process.
You probably touched on them a bit there as well, but the three I's, the intent, the implementation, the impact, tell us a bit about those and how they fit into this framework.
There are new terminology that's used in the inspection framework handbook, but really they are just a mirror of what any good research process would do. You would actually explain why and what you want to achieve. Then you would set out which is the intent. So then you would set out the implementation phase, which is the how will you construct that learning experience, and then you would monitor the impact to see if that's making a difference. And that's actually a cycle that you would continue and develop over a period of time. So it's not a one-off event, it's a journey through which you will constantly reflect on a cycle basis.
And is that something that all inspectors will be looking for? It won't be a case of, are you doing this now, or have you got to the point where you've got some impact? If you're at that just intent stage, how will that be sort of looked upon by inspectors?
If you're at the intent stage at this moment in time, there is some credit in the handbook given with these notion of the square brackets. There are four square brackets in the intent section, which is where you can reflect on and say, well, we're actually developing and devising this, and we're in the process of doing this, but we're not quite there. But that's very different to just having a wish list and a mission to say, well, in the future, we'll be doing this, 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 and this. It has to be seen that something is in place, but it actually hasn't yet had time to have the desired impact.
So you mentioned data there in one of the answers just then. Data, I imagine, still plays a part in an inspection from Ofsted. But what else are they looking for? It's not a case of handing over, here's our data, here's our exam results, here's where people are in maths, English, and all the rest of it. What else are they looking for? What does an inspector want to see?
Yeah, first thing is, it's probably, the term data is probably best interpreted with assessment information, because it may or may not include numbers. And I think that the use of data is not as high profile as perhaps previously people thought it was. It's a useful piece of information that others and people could use to interpret their the success of what they're doing, but it's not the only thing. So really, you want to articulate it in visions of where children are at in their learning, have they picked up the essential knowledge at that point, should they have that aspects of knowledge at that point in the curriculum. But of course, to be able to do that, you need to know what you are expecting from people at various points in the curriculum. So for example, one of those things is really understanding what the national curriculum looks like, and it draws out skills, it draws out thinking and evaluating, it also draws out things such as leadership and other social aspects as well, which are not easily captured by data.
By the very nature of We Are Yorkshire Sport Foundation, a lot of people listening to this will be PE leads. How important is it that the knowledge of what's going on in terms of PE and physical activity in school sport is known across the school, and also a differentiation between what PE is and what sport is? Is it, that's not, from what you were saying there, just the responsibility of the PE lead when an Ofsted can visit?
It's absolutely not the PE lead. And if you did get an Ofsted visit, the head teacher would be doing a lot of the discussions beforehand, will be expected to know what their curriculum looks like and what to expect at various points, so it certainly isn't. There's a renewed importance on the difference between physical education, school sport, and physical activity. Each valuable, but each different. And if you, there is a poster available from the Association for Physical Education that clearly defines those differences. And I think for many years, perhaps the PE lead has owned that, and it's not been known widely enough. And this is quite timely, because across the school curriculum, on getting the senior leadership team to understand this as well means you can tackle wider agendas such as physical activity and other areas that are equally important that wouldn't necessarily sit within the physical education curriculum.
So you've, Ofsted inspector comes to visit and they say, we're going to pick PE as one of those subjects we want to do a more of an in-depth look into. What are they doing? Are they coming to look at your gymnastics class that you put on as a PE class, or is it a bit broader than that?
It's broader than that, and actually it's not a PE inspection. It's actually a school inspection, and the visit will be to see if the work that's going on in those lessons is systemic. So there are some subjects will be chosen, but they wouldn't be having specific inspections. They would be having a visit to see if what the head teacher and the leadership team is saying, and the middle leaders, what you're saying happens, does it happen in lessons? So when we open a door, do we know what we should be seeing in there, and is our curriculum brought to life through the visits?
Yeah, so if you're saying you're doing active breaks within your lessons or whatever it is, a wake-up, shake-up, if an inspector goes in, they expect to see that happening, I guess,
yeah,
is what you're saying.
You'd expect the school to know what it's doing and why it's doing, and I wouldn't necessarily even call it just specifically for the activity. It's the type of things you're doing through the activity. So what level of leadership work, for example, are we doing with our year twos compared to our year six? So we might have that as a particular angle that we want to develop, and that year six work might be leading on to, for example, Playground Leaders Awards, but you may be doing things along the way to help them towards that.
What sort of questions should schools be asking themselves if they find out that PE is one of the subjects that they're going to have a look at? What questions should they be asking themselves first of all, and perhaps what actions can they take to make sure that they are they're best prepared and choose it, or use it rather, as an opportunity as opposed to oh my word, Ofsted are coming?
The inspection visit itself is the end point. Actually, they're just seeing what you've already done. So all those types of questions you would be expecting to do earlier down the line on the intent phase. So when it's, you know, what is it we want to do? How have we planned our curriculum, and how do we know it's working or not? And those questions themselves, regardless of an Ofsted visit, you should be able to justify to yourself, to the leadership, to parents, to the pupils themselves, so that they can see the relevance what the, as what's happening, and also of the progress that's being made in those lessons. So I would see the Ofsted visit as just a, hopefully if you get this right, just a confirmation of your good practice. It's not something to be used as a stick.
And the specific question we got asked of just to round this off was, someone said, how do we make it a genuine assessment of where we are as opposed to a tick box exercise? Because again, I think you might have mentioned there that some people are fearful of Ofsted and think that it's a bad thing that they're coming, as opposed to an opportunity to see where they're at and make improvements. Have you got any words of advice for either peer leads or more generally about how you do use that as an assessment?
It's just 100% not a tick box exercise. You need to evaluate where you're at. Probably the starting point is to think about what we do in our curriculum at the moment. Do we need to think and refresh, and perhaps even in some cases start again, so we've really clarified our vision and our intent? And if we do that, and we've actually expressed that in terms of then a curriculum structure, we shouldn't be worried about an Ofsted visit. And I'd hope that eventually people will be so well prepared and doing such good work that they'll be disappointed if they don't get chosen for a deep dive during inspection. And the leadership team would work with the Ofsted inspector, the lead Ofsted inspector, to decide which subjects would be used.
Thanks to Steve for his time, which came about 5 minutes after he'd already spent 25 minutes talking about exactly the same subject. So he got through a lot quite quickly then. If you do want to hear a bit more from Steve, then our peer conferences coming up are in Bradford, Wakefield and Rotherham. Again, head to our website and all the details are on there. Dan, as well as your role here, you're also a former teacher and you're a governor at a school at the moment. Is your reaction to the Ofsted framework one of excitement with that governor hat on, I guess?
I wouldn't go as far to say excitement, Andy. I'd say maybe cautious optimism is the term I would use. Certainly conversations we've had at Governors with senior leaders around the foundation subjects seem to have level pegging now with each other. PE, you know, is up there with all the other ones, but a brilliant opportunity now to reframe the curriculum and really think about what it can bring to children's lives and how it is shaped around the children and the learners at each school. So, for example, some of the conversations we're having at the minute in my school, where I'm a governor, are around the skills progressions we've got across all foundation subjects. And I've been reviewing them with a PE subject leader and noticed, and it's something I've tweeted about quite recently and asked for input from across Twitter, around what skill progressions in PE look like, because I've noticed a trend that they all seem to be focusing on the physical side of skills, not really taking into account the wider and holistic outcomes you can get from PE, thinking about the social and the cognitive and all the other elements of skill, what skill really means in PE. So I'd really like to see a PE skills progression that takes into account things like leadership and character and resilience and working as part of a team and all those sorts of things, and not just focusing on how to hold a racket or throw and catching a ball and those sorts of traditional things that you'd find in a standard, in a curriculum, you know, before this opportunity presented itself.
And we were talking about this before we started recording. You mentioned sort of it's an opportunity for schools to almost go back to the start along that intent, implementation,
absolutely,
and impact framework.
Yeah, absolutely. And again, it's something that Steve mentioned around really thinking about what we want learners to look like when they finish, when they end of key stage one, end of key stage two, even at the end of a year, and work backwards from that and say, well, actually, the impact is the bit we want to start with. What do we want the kids to look like? And work backwards in terms of, well, if that's the case, then this is what we have to implement, and this is the reasoning behind it. So it's a cyclic process, but really thinking about putting the learners at the heart of development of curriculum.
So moving on from Ofsted frameworks and on to the PE in Sport premium, there was an update on that recently. Just give people the significant bits from that you've picked up on.
Nothing massive, just some slight tweaks here and there. All of this can be found on the DfE website. If you just Google DfE PE in Sport premium, you'll come up with the same page where I get all of this information from. But it's just some firming up of some of the guidance around the performance indicators. The five KPIs are unchanged, but now underneath each one, they do have some bullet points with a bit of guidance around some suggestions of what schools could be spending some of that funding on. A bit of clarity around capital and what that means. Previously, it just said you can't spend the sports premium on capital. Well, we asked DfE what's their interpretation of capital, and then they came back and they've now written on the website it's up to schools to interpret capital themselves. So talk to your business manager or your bursar, ask them what your capital policy is if you're unsure. And finally, just some extra detail around swimming and what you can use and what you can't use the funding for around swimming top-ups.
Okay, great. We'll talk a bit more about premium briefly on the back of our next guest, who, as I say, is Matt Carbert, who is Principal Orchard Primary Academy in Dewsbury. Again, someone who we spoke to at the Kirklees P conference. Now, if you listen to episode one, you may know of the Creating Active Schools conference that took place in June. If not, essentially it was a two-day conference that brought together head teachers, subject leads, organisations like ourselves, Public Health England, Leeds Beckett University, North Yorkshire Sport, and also a lot of academic experts from local, national and international all flew in for a two-day conference. And at the end of it, there was a framework that will help support schools put physical activity at the heart of everything they do. If you want to know a bit more and a bit more detail, again, our website, yorkshiresport.org/primary PE, there's a Creating Active Schools page on there. Matt was at that conference, and as he'll tell us, he was inspired by Ian Holmes, who's a head teacher at Thorner Primary School in Leeds. Dan, before we hear from Matt, one of the phrases or acronyms he uses quite a lot within his interview is PAL. Now, for those unfamiliar with that acronym, just put it into a bit of context before we hear from him.
PAL stands for Physically Active Learning. And that can mean anything from making your maths lessons more active, so kids are walking around instead of being sat at your desks, to building in your 10-minute brain breaks where kids are up and doing activity behind their desk for 10 minutes and then sitting back down and refocusing. So all that stuff is encompassed in this PAL, their physically active learning, just getting more activity throughout the school day.
Great, thanks, Dan. And now over to Matt, who will explain what he's been doing in his school to put that into practice.
I didn't really know about the conference, if I'm honest. And a friend of mine who went to college with Niall O'Brien, he was one of the experts who was on the panel and said, look, I think you'd be really interested in this. Would you like to come as my guest? I said, of course, would. It sounds right up my street. And then spent the full day with almost mouth open thinking, wow, this is really good stuff. And this is the way that I'll be able to put my personal mark on Orchard after 2 years.
You say they sat their mouth open. Was it all just one big light bulb moment, or was there anything in particular that sort of focused your mind and went, yeah, actually, we need to make this more than just sitting at a conference and hear about it and make it a reality?
I think majority of the day it was, you know, listening to experts that have been flown in from across the world and seeing, you know, what they're doing. But I think the moment that stood out for me was the head teacher in Leeds, Ian Thorne, I think his name was, and just looking at it, you know, someone in my position, what they've been able to do, and thinking, well, I could do that as well. I've got that same passion, I've got that same drive. I like that. Oh, I think we could do something with that. And then the brain was ticking whilst I was sat in the conference at that point. So.
Well, hopefully people listening to this will take some inspiration from what you're about to tell us. So what was the first thing you did then? You go back to school, whether that be the next day or when you sat there in your office in the weeks over summer still doing work. What was the first thing you did to sort of start to put things into practice?
I think it was a case of evaluating what we were currently doing. So I knew we went to lots of sport events. Participation was good, extracurricular program was strong, but it was what was going on during the day. You know, what were the PE lessons like? What was going on during lessons? And I just came to the conclusion that lots of sedentary learning, PE was the first thing to fall away. So the gym mats had been in the corner for 2 years. Not done gymnastics. Every lesson seemed to have an element of rounders or bench ball in it. So it was a chance, right, let's look at the curriculum and let's look at creating a legacy from this PE sports premium.
One of the things you touched on there when you did your chat at the Kirklees PE conference was that you took the decision to make yourself the PE lead. Extra responsibility as a head teacher, just in case you didn't have enough. But why did you think that was particularly important?
You know, like I said in the conference, I'm the one who's got to make the decisions. I'm the one who can make those decisions. And probably understanding the frustration of being a PE leader in the past, when everything's been reading, writing, maths, being able to go, actually, no, I fundamentally believe in this. And if we say we're introducing active lessons, if that comes from a PE leader, you'll probably get 30% buy-in from teachers. If it comes from myself, and then you put it as part of performance management targets, it takes on a whole different meaning from then on.
And how has the reaction been from your sort of your teachers that work with you in the school? Like you mentioned, I think, again, you had quite a lot of perhaps NQTs or RQTs, so keen to please, I guess. But what was the response from both them and perhaps more of the perhaps established teachers that you might have?
Yeah, I think it's like I said in the presentation, the school was in a bit of a mess when they got there, and there've been a lot of new initiatives, a lot of new things put in place. You know, over the last 2 years, we've stripped things back and really take it back to basics. And it's like anything you introduce. Teachers always think, well, is this more workload? What am I going to have to do? Have I got the capability and capacity to do this? But I literally probably spent every day in those last few weeks of our term talking about these three letters, pal, 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 pal. And you could see the other senior leaders and teachers going, no, he's talking about this pal again. But I think I went back and I put everything into a PowerPoint, it was almost like a mind map PowerPoint, and said, these are my ideas. What do you think? And I think the first buy-in was the senior leaders, and then finding the quick wins with the teachers as well. But even in the early days, I was having to constantly monitor, are these active breaks going on? Are the PE lessons, what I'm seeing in front of me, happening in that hall? So it's like anything, when you introduce it, you've got to monitor it, make sure it happens until it becomes the norm, I guess.
So perhaps for other head teachers or PE leads or senior leaders that are listening to this, you mentioned some quick wins there. What were some of those first sort of couple of quick wins that you had?
Yeah, I think getting a curriculum in place is obviously a big thing, making sure, you know, it's a broad and balanced curriculum, you know, in PE has to be, making, you know, looking at CPD opportunities for your teachers. One thing I know when I got a few raised eyebrows during the meeting was the fact that I wanted my staff to run the extracurricular activities. If the PE premium is taken away this year, where's the legacy of paying for coaches? Yes, I did say to my staff that if you run a club for 6 weeks, at some point in the year, you would get a day off in lieu. And lo and behold, everyone has signed up to do that. And I just think, you know, teachers work in a profession where the demands are high, constantly being asked to do more, do more, do more. Well, if you're going to do this for me and these children, you deserve something back for that.
And how is that affecting teachers? Because we've spoken to Steve Coldscott, and we've heard from Steve today, and the shift in the emphasis perhaps from being data and assessment driven. We talk, you know, this is it for the good of the kids, of course, but how are you finding perhaps it's impacting perhaps on staff wellbeing, whether it is that extra day or is that getting out of the classroom for an hour after school instead of sitting in and marking books straight away? Are you finding a difference in them? Are they coming to you and saying they feel, you know, they feel different perhaps about workloads, or what's the impact been on teachers?
It's still early days with the PAL strategy. We've introduced a few things, you know, obviously like most schools are streaming the marking, cutting down on the data and assessment, so hopefully those things are coming through anyway. But sort of things like about all staff PE kit, they can come to school in that PE. If they're teaching PE on that day, they can come to school in their PE kit. So I've done it before, rushing around at lunchtime, trying to get your kit on, prepare for that lesson, get the balls out of the cupboard. So I've said, look, if you want to come in your PE kit for the day, come in your PE kit. I'm a sportsman myself, not particularly fond of wearing a shirt and tie every day. So if somebody said to me 5 years ago, come in your PE kit, for me, that's just those little things that I'm trying to think about that make a difference.
So the after-school clubs that the teachers lead, you've mentioned, you touched on a couple of things in there around active breaks. What else have you introduced? You mentioned you've got a two-year plan, but what are some of the things you've introduced early on?
Early on, so obviously we talked about the active breaks, two of those a day, the extracurricular stuff, but really thinking about the mindfulness side of things as well. So our maths lesson after break is an hour and 20 minutes. I can't concentrate for an hour and 20 minutes. So what we've done after 45 minutes of that lesson, there's a 5 minute break where children don't leave the classroom, but they stop. And then we use apps such as Headspace. There's a little bit of relaxation things going on. It's basically just saying to children, you've worked your socks off for 45 minutes, have 5 minutes. It's not get up, run around, go talk to your friend, but that it's either relaxation things or thinking about teaching them about mindset. You know, and it's, again, something new to the teachers. Some teachers, that kind of thing comes quite naturally. Some teachers, it's like, wow, mindset. And making sure that I'm saying to teachers, in that 5 minutes, that's not your chance to go around and mark. I want you to model that to children as well. And again, you know, we're 8-9 weeks into this. But that's been the early thing as well.
was about to say, we're stood here looking out over Huddersfield Reunion pitch. He's absolutely tipping it down. It's just after October half term. One thing Steve took there, the three eyes in this new Ofsted framework, the intent, implementation, and then the impact. I guess at this early stage, you've clearly got the intent and you start to implement things. You haven't quite got perhaps a lot of impact to refer to, but what have you seen? Have you seen anything so far amongst the children? Is it whether it's behaviour or attainment or just their general well-being and mood around the school?
I think the main thing that I've seen early doors is happy children. They love the active breaks, you know. I really encourage staff to get outside for these active breaks. So on a day like today, this would be tricky. So that's where we do things like go noodle, cosmic yoga, or, you know, I'm starting to see teachers do their own thing now. So rather than in the early days, it was very prescriptive. You could do this. Actually now I'm seeing teachers, right, well, in that active break this week, we're teaching Bangra style music. You know, really thinking about what they're doing. But like I said, teachers have a kit bag as well, bean bags, balls, skipping ropes, and saying to them, well, if you're in the middle of an English lesson, why don't you do something English based outside? So there was one teacher was doing skipping relays, and as they got back, before they could give their partner the skipping rope, they had to say a noun that related to the last noun that their partner said. So it's ways of thinking about that and just saying to teachers, look, I know we're not going to be perfect at this to start with. And then another impact as well is we've seen a shift in behaviour, even early on. You know, if when we analyse our behaviour incidents, they're very much out break times and lunch times. It's very rarely in the classroom now. And I think, hopefully, and I think the theory backs this up, that children recognise that they've got this break. They're not being asked to concentrate for 2 hours. We recognise that they need a break. So, like I say, very early days, but hopefully, you know, this time next year, I'll have the hard data to say, well, this is why we do PAL.
Those active breaks you touched on, when you, again, referring back to your speech at the conference, you said they're in the timetable, aren't they?
Yeah,
this time you will stop and we will do an active break. It's not a case of, do an active break and a teacher thinks, well, no, I want to make sure we get to the end of this maths lesson. So that's great. So there's some of the short-term things, and it is only early days, but what's your perhaps medium-term vision and longer-term vision? You've mentioned you've got a two-year PAL strategy, so we're 8 or 9 weeks into that. What's next and what do you hope to get to before the end of this academic year, I guess, first, and then into the next?
So by the end of the academic year, I think it's been spoken about a couple of times this morning, the Daily Mile. I think the Daily Mile initiative's amazing, but it's a big commitment. So we are at the stage of employing a new learning mentor. So thinking outside the box, as part of their job description, they will lead the Daily Mile. So it was a case of, right, what time do they need to start work? And giving them the kind of capacity to be able to run the Daily Mile. So rather than it being, the teacher goes, I'll do Daily Mile, and then it happens for 2 weeks and then falls away, this is part of somebody's job that we're bringing into school. So it's you know, the Daily Mile. Thinking about and moving on into next year, it's Breakfast Club. What's really going on in Breakfast Club? You know, so I know that on wet days, the children go into the computer suite. Well, why don't they go into the hall instead? You know, and about really training the breakfast staff to be able to lead some activities in the hall. And then I think the big one will be travelling to and from school. We're fortunate where we are, that where the school is, a lot of the children come from the local area. So there are a lot of children who already walk. But there's a lot of children in that playground from 8:30. So what are they doing apart from the Daily Mile for the first 20 minutes? And then thinking about, you know, bikes, scooters, you know, we need to accommodate. If children want to come to school on the bikes, we need to make sure we've got scooters somewhere where they really, you know, they can keep them. They can maybe get them out at dinner time. You know, it's trying to think outside the box to think, well, rather than it just being a flash in the pan 2 week thing, where's the sustainability in all of this?
It's really interesting. You spoke so much there about how a conference that you weren't due to attend has sparked quite a significant culture change, not just for you as a teacher, but for your staff, your pupils, and I guess the knock-on effect next will then will be the parents, because when you talk about bringing kids to school, what would you say to other head teachers who might be listening to this thinking, that sounds great, but... or looking at, how am I going to fit that in? Because I guess you might have thought the same, like say you've got your own challenges at your school, you're a relatively new head teacher. So what would your advice be to other head teachers or perhaps PLEs wanting to convince their head teachers that this is something or a way to go and a way of implementing it in their school?
Be bold. There's no better time to do it with all the things that are coming out with the PAL strategy, the new framework fits very well with this. And it's just that be bold in making those decisions. You know, I'm at a school where results still need to improve from where they are. We've not finished in by any means in what we're doing, but you know, the research to the benefits of physical activity is there. You know, you're not going to find research that says physical activity is bad for academic success. It's all in the opposite direction. It won't happen straight away. There's a lot of behavioural changes that happen first. But you know that we've got to do something about this level of inactivity for children. And I think if children are at school for 6 hours plus a day, that's where it starts. You know, and then you get on to bring, you know, like you asked earlier about long term, it's going to be about getting the parents on board with this as well. But yeah, to head teachers, it's, you know, if you're going to do something in your school, why don't you just get your kids active?
Dan, must be music to your ears to hear that Matt is taking steps to put physical activity at the heart of his school. I guess one of the things when we touched on the premium earlier is the sustainability. There's no indication yet how long this money might continue for. That if the money does disappear at the end of this academic year, they're in a stronger position to carry on with things, won't they?
Absolutely. And I think it's great the work that Matt's doing and lots of schools that we're working with around implementing the framework are having similar sorts of thoughts around the long-term vision of PE, sport and physical activity at the school. And starting to plan for a time where we don't have the liberty of £18,000 a year or whatever it might be. Starting to think about how things are sustainable. And if you've got coaches coming in, teaching PE, how you can start to plan for a time when you won't be able to pay for that out of the sports PE and sports premium, and how, again, this is something that is explicitly mentioned in the new guidance on the website around how those teachers are working, how those coaches are working alongside teachers going forward. And a lot of the work we've done with schools in the Jump project, the local delivery pilot we've got funding from Sport England to do in Bradford, is how schools can use that framework to make physical activity part of their whole school ethos. So I've had a couple of meetings with head teachers reviewing their whole school improvement plan, looking at opportunities to put physical activity in there. We had a great conversation with a head teacher who said, well, I'm just going to make one of our school rules, be active. Something as simple as that. Or, you know, how is physical activity embedded in the school's vision? You know, a happy, healthy school where we're active and learn better. Things like that, where it's just part of a conversation, regularly speaking, not just an add-on or a bonus because we've got an extra bit of money to do it.
I was speaking to Matt after we finished our sort of our interview, if you like, and he mentioned that there's a lot of challenges at the school when he went in there, and one of them still is that they need to get the reading levels up. So I guess that goes to show that putting this as a priority doesn't need to necessarily be to the detriment of other priorities within the school. And the last thing he said was be bold, wasn't it? And be creative. He's been creative with that example of if a teacher leads a after school club for 6 weeks, they get a day off. So I guess it's a coin a cheesy phrase, you've got to think a little bit outside the box and be a little bit flexible with what you're going to do if you want to make this happen.
Absolutely. I love that idea. Taking 6 weeks of a club and you get a day off. That's again addressing teachers' well-being as well, because yes, you can look at ways to get the kids more active. And so it does have the benefits of, you know, attainment and behavior and all the things you'd expect. But ultimately, you want to have the rest of the staff on board with you. And how do you get them invested in this journey? Well, you give them an extra day off, then they're more than likely to agree with the methods you're doing. But yeah, again, it's as you say, he has lots of challenges at the school, and lots of schools we work with do have big challenges. And it's about seeing this isn't doing physical activity for the sake of it or necessarily to get kids to lose weight or whatever. It should be there to serve a purpose, to address those challenges in the school. If reading is a problem, and it is in a lot of schools, what can we do to address how reading is taught in schools? Maybe for a small group of learners, being active while you're reading, running around the playground trying to find snippets from a comic or something, will get them to start wanting to read it. And there's evidence, there's research to show that physically active learning does have proven impact on short-term memory, on knowledge retention and concentration. So it's why wouldn't you?
it's interesting that everything we do is obviously for the benefit of the children in the schools, but I think the teachers' wellbeing thing is quite a big aspect of that as well. And when Matt spoke about it, he said that it's not a case of teachers stopping and saying, right, you do this while I have 10 minutes to mark my maths books. When there is so many different pressures, such a big workload on teachers, doing something like this, and I guess that is the thing of it being at the centre of everything the school does, it's going to benefit the kids, but it's also going to benefit the teachers and perhaps give them a bit more mind space, I guess, to be creative and do what they want to do and feel like they're not drowning in marking or assessments or meetings as well.
Yeah, definitely. I love that when Matt was talking about doing some of the mindfulness in his lessons, and it's not just for the kids. I think all of the teachers that are listening to this will absolutely understand what it's like after you've been teaching a lesson for 40, 45 minutes. You just need a bit of time yourself to take a step back and you know, to recharge your batteries and start again, even if it's only for 5 or 10 minutes. I absolutely think we've got to put teachers at the centre of this and think about their well-being. And none of this should contribute to what is already a massive workload. It should actually be seen as reducing their workload, because instances of bad behaviour will be reduced, learning will be better, attainment will be better. Hopefully the number of interventions you do should be better because attainment will increase. So I think if it's positioned around that and reframed in the right way, more schools, more head teachers will start seeing the benefits of physical activity throughout the school day.
You mentioned interventions there. It reminded me of something you said when we keep referencing the Kirklees PE conference. But something you said there is there are lots of great intervention type things out there, like the Daily Mile, Tagtivate, various others. Creating active schools is not an intervention, is it? It's something that we want to try and, along with working with the partners that we're working with, embed in schools, and it just runs through schools as opposed to be drop in for X amount of time.
Excellent. It's a multifaceted approach, looking at the Mitchie's Combi model of behaviour change. And I'm not going to go into great depth explaining it now, but it just says that pretty much if you're going to bring an intervention into a school, you've got to think about the capability, the motivation, and the opportunities behind that of the staff, of the pupils. Are they at a stage where they can access something like the Daily Mile? You're right. It's a brilliant intervention where it works well, but it's not going to be suitable for every single school who haven't thought about how it fits their learners. So teachers do have to be creative in shaping these interventions so that it does suit the learners at the school. It goes back to what I was saying before about the new inspection framework. Same thing with this Creating Active Schools framework. Don't just do these interventions because they're cheap or they seem like a good idea or they're a flash in the pan or a craze at the minute. Really do that deep dive into assessing the capabilities, the opportunities, and the motivations of the kids at your school, and whether those interventions are going to work best at this part of the school day, for this group of kids, for this year group, for this type of learner. It's all got to be meticulously planned.
Do you want to finish with a bit of a notice board, some dates for people's diaries and other useful things to be aware of? Firstly, the PE conferences, which we've mentioned. The Bradford PE conference is on November the 29th, so still time to get booked on for that. In Wakefield, it's January the 21st, and we've got our final one in Rotherham on February the 5th. All conferences are £50 per person, and there's a head teacher briefing pre-9 a.m. So if you're a head teacher, listen to this. Can't perhaps commit to the 9 till 4 full day, then that could be the one for you. Again, just go to our website for that. Another date for the diary is the results of the Children and Young People Active Lives survey led by Sport England. That's on December the 5th. Well, we'll get the latest results of that around the physical activity levels of children aged 5 to 16. Details of those will be on our website and on our social media channels on that day. Around that, schools selected for the next round of surveys for Active Lives will have been notified. So if you've not been contacted, you're not one of the schools, but you can still opt in if you want to get an idea of the activity levels and the attitudes towards activity within your school. If you are interested in that, contact us at Yorkshire Sport and ask for Charlotte. Final one is the Daily Mile. If those are schools who perhaps are considering the Daily Mile or want to get it restarted in their school, there is a new resource called Daily Mile Destinations, where you do your Daily Miles and it stops off at various points around the world. There's fact sheets and things that you can include it within your curriculum and make it more than just a 15 minutes going out and doing a run or a walk or whatever around the playground. You can link it in with some useful things to help kids learn about the various parts of the world. So that is our notice board, and that is the end of this episode. Thanks again to Steve and to Matt for speaking to us. Thank you to Dan. Thank you for listening. And again, if you have any suggestions, tweet us at Yorkshire Sport or email us media@yorkshiresport.org.